Next case for this morning is United States versus $84,000 plus.
May it please the court, my name is Anthony Delier and I represent Robert Ross. In the United States in general, and in the state of Wisconsin specifically, adoption without a court order is known as kidnapping. And while no crime has been committed in this case, the seizure of the money in this case was unlawful.
This Why isn't there a collateral estoppel in this case? The state court decided that this was all right, so why isn't that a stop for the federal court from reaching any other conclusion?
The state court at the trial level decided it was all right. An appeal was entered in the case, and the judge in the state court specifically said that he thought that this was something that might benefit from appellate court review.
Yeah, but as I understand it, in Wisconsin, there's still collateral estoppel until an appellate court actually reverses the trial court. I think collateral estoppel can apply from a decision of a trial court. Well, go ahead with your argument.
Okay. Long ago, this government decided United States versus one 1979 Chevy C20 van that the police would have to transfer property with lawful authority and that these transfers could not be used to circumvent the district court or the circuit court. This practice is still contrary to the law in Wisconsin. Wisconsin has statutes and a constitution that would prevent the practice of the police simply giving the rest to the government. And in this case, the government's case isn't even as strong as it was in the C20 van, because there was no administrative forfeiture to confer jurisdiction, because that jurisdiction would simply bypass the court's jurisdiction. So here, the government is reduced for arguing for jurisdiction with even less. They're trying to say that the mere transfer of the government strips the circuit court of jurisdiction in this case. Much has been made of the DEA's possession in this case, but 18 United States Code 1981 E2 gives the DEA the absolute ability and authority to give the money back to the Dane County Narcotics and Gang Task Force. So it doesn't matter which shell the money is under, because the jurisdiction does not go with the money or the shell. The government does not wrest lawful possession and control of the rest from the circuit court by the mere transfer of the rest. Wisconsin has a procedure. Wisconsin has laws regarding this, and there are three parties.
So Wisconsin has a more complicated procedure. It's more difficult to forfeit the money in Wisconsin. So the Wisconsin authorities that have custody turn it over to the feds because they have an easier procedure. I think that's not unusual, is it?
Actually, I don't believe that that's the reason why they turn it over, Your Honor. The process is actually much more difficult in the federal court if you exclude the administrative portion of it. But the real reason why they turn it over is if the federal government forfeits the money, the state gets 80 to 85% of it directly to the police department, and the federal government keeps 15%. If the case stays in the state court, Wisconsin schools get 50% of the money. And so the government and the district attorney, who both want to give the money to the police, have a powerful desire to make sure that that money is given to
What's
the police.
What's wrong with that?
Well, there's really nothing wrong with that, except for that it is essentially allowing the district attorney to call somebody and say, hey, I got some money for you, why don't you come get it? Instead of following the law in Wisconsin, which says that the courts have jurisdiction, original jurisdiction, in all the matters that come before them. And so all that they would really need to do is the DA could say, I'm going to commence a forfeiture and we'll take the money. The federal government could commence a forfeiture or adopt a forfeiture, or the person who had the money taken from them could file for the money back. Essentially, what I'm looking for here is the bedrock of American justice. Notice, and that's all that we needed to
this
have.
This wasn't a joint task force arrangement.
Correct. The task force does receive some federal funding, but none of the officers were federal agents. And so,
why was the word exclusive removed from the Wisconsin statute?
I think that the word exclusive was removed from the Wisconsin statute to say exactly that. we no longer have exclusive jurisdiction. The federal government can follow our process. They can come before the court, say we would like to have a forfeiture here, submit pleadings, and the rest and the jurisdiction would transfer to federal court. And it would be as simple as that.
Well, you're saying if they ask for a turnover order, but they still have exclusive jurisdiction under that scenario.
Actually, the Wisconsin Supreme Court in Jones addressed that very issue. In State v. Jones, 226, Wisconsin 2nd, 565, the Wisconsin Supreme Court warned that the state could be deprived of jurisdiction if it delayed in commencing an action. That, in fact, the federal government could come and file and take the res from the state. Obviously, the court is well aware of the fact that the state might actually still possess the res, but they're aware that the federal government, by commencing an action in the court, would be able to obtain jurisdiction, not because they possess the money, but because they follow the law. The only way that this court or any other court can construe these statutes as a coherent whole, and the statutes are 961-55, 961-555, 968-19, and most importantly, 735-30, is by the plain language of the statute. It's true the government, the Wisconsin legislature did change the language of the statute. They removed the word exclusive, and they added that the federal government could come to the court and take jurisdiction of the rest. But the thing that is important to understand here is by the state and the government's reading, as they proposed in this case, what we would have to do is we would have to say 968-19 has been repealed or revoked. And more importantly, that 735-30 has been repealed or revoked. 735-30 embodies Article 8, Article 7, Section 8 of the Wisconsin Constitution, granting original jurisdiction to the court. For this court to rule that the government is correct, you will have to abrogate not only two sections of the Wisconsin Code, but a section of the code that essentially restates our Constitution. Neither this court nor the Wisconsin legislature are empowered to do that. But assuming arguendo that there is no concurrent, that there is now concurrent jurisdiction as the court implied in Jones, then Penn General Casualty tells us that whoever filed the complaint first is the person with jurisdiction, is the party with jurisdiction. And that makes perfect sense because it would have prevented the problem that we see here today. It shouldn't be about when service was done. It shouldn't be about who has the money. It's about who invoked the legal process. That is what we're asking for at this time, is legal process. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Daddio. Mr. O'Connor?
Good morning, Your Honor.
Why isn't there a collateral estoppel in this case?
I don't know, Your Honor. It seems to me like the decision that Judge Albert made on reconsideration is correct, that Judge Crabb agreed with that judgment that the United States had jurisdiction, that she had jurisdiction. And frankly, I don't know why we are not living with that rule at this point.
Well, in the Heritage Bank case, at least, the court said the pendency of an appeal does not deprive an otherwise final judgment of its preclusive effect unless and until the judgment is reversed. I'm not sure I understand why it makes any difference that this thing is on appeal.
Which appeal, Your Honor? There are two appeals.
The state appeal. Yeah.
The state appeal had not been filed, I don't believe, until well after Judge Crabb issued her order of forfeiture in this action in the early summer of last year. If it pleases the court, the status of the two cases I think is important to understand here. Currently, the Wisconsin Court of Appeals has stayed the motion or the appeal of Judge Albert's order pending whether or not this court was going to act on our motion for certification. Or if you certified it to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, a decision by the Wisconsin Supreme Court. That's where this case stands at this point. I still believe it should be certified because it is such a unique question of state law. However, talking to the merits of this particular case.
Well, we have two very distinguished Wisconsin judges on this court.
We do, and it seems to me that the statute as amended is exactly the way it was is correctly interpreted by Judge Crabb and Judge Albert ultimately. The possession of this res in this case, the $84,000, when it was transferred to the United States by Dane County Drug and Gang Task Force in March of 2002, the question is, was that an authorized transfer or not? Did they authorize the money? Were they authorized under the new statute to transfer the money? I think it's very clear that they could do that, in that the amendment to 555-1 was precisely to overcome the problem identified by this court in the C-20 Van case a couple of years ago. If that transfer was correct, was legal, then the administrative action, and the administrative action has begun, the possession of the res is the important point for asserting judicial jurisdiction over the property. The agents of the sovereign United States had possession and control of that res at that time, March of 2002. It formally adopted the seizure of the thing, I believe, on April 2nd of 2002, and the cases say that upon adoption of a state seizure, possession relates back to the time it was actually seized, which was early March of 2002. What happens next is kind of a juggling of cases. The United States District Court and our office could do nothing as far as the forfeiture was concerned until there was an administrative claim filed by Mr. Ross. He did that. When he did that, the administrative claim ceased, and the United States then had 90 days to file its federal judicial forfeiture action. We did that timely. In the meantime, this fight is going on in the state court over whether or not Judge Albert actually had jurisdiction. So I guess this case comes down to possession and control of the property, not whether or not Mr. Ross decided to file a case or not. As Judge Crabb pointed out in her order, 961-55-4 does not apply to this case, as the Jones case stated, because there was no judicial proceeding commenced under 555-1 prior to the federal forfeiture. Jones says that if the district attorney decides not to file a state forfeiture, then 55-4 does not apply and he's got to go to 968. Is 968-20 an in rem jurisdiction? I don't know. I think it may be quasi in rem. It's a person coming back to the state saying, hey, you've got some property of mine. Will you give it back to me? That's what Mr. Ross did. In the meantime, the res that's the subject of our in rem jurisdiction case in the federal court was in the control and custody of the United States. There was no competing case at all, with the exception of this quasi in rem claim. Unless you have other questions.
Mr. Ross was never charged, at least as far as
he was never charged. He only claimed an interest in the property when he filed his notice of claim in the administrative procedure after he had denied any knowledge or information about it during the investigation.
Thank you, Mr.
Before you put that one, just curiosity, it has nothing to do with the merits of this case, but why does the DEA put a forfeiture notice in the Wall Street Journal?
You know, I noticed that when that happened before, it seemed to me that they usually do it in USA Today or some other paper. I don't know why they put it in the Wall Street Journal.
Has that changed by administration?
It might have. I'm not getting into that. I don't know, Your Honor.
Thank you. Counsel, how much time? We have 2 minutes.
The transfer of the possession and control is of no legal consequence in this case. The process begins under 19 United States Code 1607 when a forfeiture complaint is filed. In Wisconsin, under 96820, the companion to 96155, when the request for the property's return is filed. That is when the process begins. It matters not who has the property at that time. As far as estoppel goes, perhaps it's being addressed a little bit late, but when the government went to the federal court on September 9th to ask for a seizure warrant, they failed to mention that Judge Albert had already ruled against the government and against the state. And so this case came into federal court under false pretenses from the very beginning. I ask that the court consider, once again, the bedrock of our system is notice and due process. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. Case is taken under advisement.